Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
AP News, I'm Ben Thomas. In the Senate,
the joint resolution is passed.
A bill that aims to head off a freight rail strike. It will bind rail companies and workers to a deal brokered in September, but rejected by four of the 12 unions involved. Count retired railway engineer Jeff Kurtz among those unhappy.
This is going to be a bipartisan disaster because Republicans are just as responsible for this debacle as the Democrats.
The bill now goes to President Biden for his signature. Hosting his administration's first state visit, President Biden is acknowledging French concerns over his signature climate change law. Sagar Magani.
Amid the pomp of French President Emmanuel Macron's White House visit, differences over trade shadow the occasion. Macron and other European leaders say incentives in the Inflation Reduction Act favor American-made climate technology. And while he applauds U.S. efforts to fight climate change, the subsidies would hurt European companies.
We want to succeed together, not one against the other.
At a joint news conference, President Biden said he makes no apologies for a law he wrote, but there are glitches.
There's tweaks that we can make.
Macron says the nations will resynchronize their clean energy efforts. Sagar Magani, Washington.
And President Biden is weighing in on the Democrats' presidential nominating calendar. In a letter to the party's rulemaking arm, he says Democrats should move past restrictive caucuses and embrace diversity. Seen as a major blow to Iowa's leadoff status, the panel expected to move South Carolina to first. And Ed Donahue reports the Supreme Court has agreed to take up the Biden administration program to...
Taken from the property. I'm Norman Hall.
This is AP News.
Girls and boys in poverty around the world are dreaming of a better life, filled with dance, art, music, and knowledge. They dream of a brighter future with enough nutritious food to eat, a chance to learn and grow, to get an education, escape poverty, and do incredible things. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, such dreams are coming true. Together, we give children a chance to set their sights high and succeed in school and in life by ensuring that they have access to healthcare, education, life skills, and so much more so they can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves. Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today. Together, we can help end poverty for good.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
They were going to show a video of Roger Stone recorded by Danish filmmakers.
Just Google Roger Stone Monopoly Man.
You remember the old Batman TV series? He looks like the Penguin.
It's like a bad costume for A Christmas Carol.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
And I know that firsthand because I was in that every year as a kid. Always a street urchin, never a Cratchit.
That needs to be the title of your autobiography. Always a street urchin, never a Cratchit.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry right here on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
It's Friday.
Oh, it is Friday.
It was a short week, and it still feels like it was a long week. And we did it!
We did. Well, we're almost
it.
We almost did it.
We're still going to get through today. But we did it. We live to tell about it. We're having fun.
Yeah. All kinds of fun things planned for today.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Right here on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
We have to really understand how critically important a time this is. Time for talk is over. The time for action is now. Because my voice has always been and will continue to be for people who don't have a voice.
Tune in to the Earl Ingram Show every Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Only on WAUK 540 AM, 101.1 FM, The Shaw.
self-monitor your blood pressure in 4 easy-to-remember steps. Self-monitoring is power. Visit managerbp.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Heart Association, and the American Medical Association, in partnership with the Office of Minority Health and Health Resources and Services Administration.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. The January 6th committee is now ready to get to work on its final report after hearing from Wisconsin Assembly Speaker Robin Voss yesterday. Voss's meeting with the committee was the last scheduled deposition in the committee's investigation. In a statement, Voss says he answered the committee's questions about the 2020 election and maintains he was not involved in the attack on the Capitol in 2021. Darryl Brooks Jr. is appealing his convictions for killing 6 people and wounding dozens of others at the Waukesha Christmas Parade last year. Brooks represented himself at his trial, but now he's asking for help from the Public Defender's Office. Waukesha's Christmas Parade is scheduled to return Sunday for the first time since the attack. In sports, the Bucks beat the Knicks last night 109-103. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
And never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Welcome back to Atlanta as we continue our coverage here of the Georgia runoff and spending time, you know, talking with union members, talking with voters, you know, who've gone out and voted. And this is the thing. They're doing the early voting. In fact, ends Friday at 7 o'clock. Everybody I talk to, you know, the lines are long. And I'm going, should it be this difficult to vote? The answer to me, no. And here to share some thoughts on maybe why it's so difficult to vote, and maybe what we should be doing, and maybe how we go about getting things done. I've asked our good friend, investigative reporter Greg Pallas, to come share some thoughts with us. You may remember Greg, the movie, the fabulous movie Vigilante, Georgia's vote suppression hitman. Well, where we are here in Georgia, well, here it is. Greg, thanks for taking time for us.
You're very welcome. Glad to be down here in Georgia with you, if across the town. I should also mention that WCPT had hosted Vigilante, Georgia's vote suppression hitman, and we are now, thanks to a donation from Jamie Foxx, we're able to offer the film for free through the Georgia runoff on Tuesday. So if you go to vigilantemovie.com, you can actually watch this thing, and then that's it. Won't even be available commercially.
There you go.
So this is it, vigilantemovie.com. It's about an hour, and grab your popcorn. You'll laugh, you'll cry, and if you don't, I'll pay for your therapy. Now, but here we go. So we're in Georgia, and yes, you know, the national press, I don't know what's with these guys. They are looking at these long lines and they're saying, isn't that wonderful? All these black people voting. There's no more Jim Crow. Well, I'm sorry. My lawyer, C.K. Hoffler, who is the chairwoman of Rainbow Push, she waited 11 hours.
Yeah.
What the heck is going on? And I'll tell you what's going on. Okay, here's the story. The reason there are long lines is not because of a Jim Crow's runaway. It's because 2 years ago, Raphael Warnock won in a special election against Kelly Loeffler. And he won by less than 100,000 votes, but 400,000 votes of his plurality, almost 500,000 votes, came from the mail-in balloting, which was allowed during COVID. So you had this massive mail-in vote that went over 2-1 for Warnock. So the Governor Brian Kemp, our GOP hero, and by the way, who the Wall Street Journal just endorsed for president. He just got the endorsement of the Wall Street Journal for president.
Of course he did.
And one of the reasons why they endorsed him for president, I assume, is because 2 weeks after Warnock was elected by the mail-in vote, they changed the law, SB 202, to make mail-in balloting during a runoff all but illegal. Here's how they did it. First, they said the Atlanta area, they passed a law saying that counties with more than 100,000 active voters can't have more than one drop box per 100,000 active voters. Imagine that. 100,000 active voters have to share one ballot drop box. And now that only affects 4 of the 159 counties of Georgia. Oddly, it's the 4 big black counties of Georgia where they have a ballot box restriction. The others don't have that. They don't have to worry about the ballot box restriction. Not only that, well, they do have to worry about one thing. They are required to add drop boxes in the white rural areas. I'm not making this up. This is in law. This is in law in Georgia passed weeks after Warnock won and Ossoff and Biden won last time. Then they cut the runoff time. You'll love this one, Rick. I hope people are taking notes on this. But if you go to gregpalace.com, I can lay it out for you. But they cut the runoff time from 2 years ago when Warnock won from 60 days to 28 days. So that means that that black people who tend to vote early, not tend to, the vast majority of black people vote early by mail or in person at early voting stations. They crushed the time by 2/3. So think about that. They had 16 days of early voting 2 years ago when Warnock won, and he won the early vote. This time they've crushed it to 5 days in most counties. And after a court ruling by Gerald Griggs, the great NAACP attorney, after court ruling, they were able to get 6 or 7 days in a couple counties. So that you go from 16 days of early voting to 5 to 7 days of early voting. You take the mail-in, the ballot boxes, you reduce them in black Atlanta, not by a minor amount, by 77%. Wow. That's by state law. They increase them in the white areas. I'm not making this up. And they also said that because black people tend to use mail-in balloting and drop boxes, because for good reasons they don't trust the Postal Service, I'll tell you why, they shuttered the drop boxes. So when you say voting ends at early voting ends at 7 p.m. Friday, at the same time, they're shuttering all the drop boxes. So that over the weekend, which by the way is usually the traditional black souls to the polls voting day, there will be no early voting on souls to the polls weekend. There will be, and the ballot drop boxes are locked away in office buildings. There will be no drop boxes, even on election day. So if you're in a five-hour line but you have a ballot in your hand, you can't go and stick it in the drop box. So this is all because these are ballots that are won more than 2-1 by Reverend Warnock. In Atlanta, he won them 3-1. And so they are making it brutally difficult to vote in Atlanta. So people are waiting, saying, okay, my only choice, and the voting rights groups are saying, get in line, suffer it through. And by the way, while you're waiting 5 hours in line, this is no joke, that you can't take if someone hands you a slice of pizza, someone hands you a bottle of water while you're waiting 5 hours in line, this is Georgia. It's brutal. And there's been rain too. So you got rain, you got sun. If you take any food or water, it's a felony crime. Felony crime. Yeah. And so you have to understand what's going on here. And plus, other states allow you to mail in your ballot and then they count it if it's postmarked by election day. That's in California and most of American civilization. Well, outside of America, in Georgia, you have to have the ballot has to be received by the state and stamped by the state on election day by 7 p.m. So, so all the voting rights groups are saying, do not mail your ballot. Either try to get in during those early voting hours, wait in line or find that drop box. And because they cut the number of drop boxes, you have to hunt for that drop box.
It shouldn't be this difficult, Greg. This sounds way too complicated.
Oh. But one thing I will say, now here's the good news. African-American voters in Georgia are the most sophisticated voters in the nation, black, white, orange, green, yellow, anything. They are, because they've gone through this Jim Crow stuff for years. Think about it. This is redneck Georgia, supposedly. Redneck red, right? That's the trope from the national press. But the national press got caught with its newspaper pants down when Biden, Ossoff, and Warnock won 2 years ago, because they didn't understand that despite the Jim Crow, people will go out. They're gonna fight it. And it's a very sophisticated operation. And by the way, it's not done by the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party has nothing to do with the turnout. This is all voting rights group. Black Voters Matter,
yeah.
NAACP, Campaign for Prosperous. People's Agenda, Georgia Coalition for People's Agenda. These are groups you may have never heard of. But here, they are powerful. They're organized. And it's quite amazing. But don't forget the evangelicals for every progressive in Atlanta. You've got the evangelical vote downstate. And, I got to tell you, people on the coast just don't get it. And they see long lines. They go, oh, they, they're, they're accepting the Brian Kemp line.
Democracy's working.
Democracy's working. Look at all those people in line. Well, they're only in line because you crushed their voting time by 2/3. You shut off their ballots. You won't let them mail in their votes. How do you even request a ballot? Now, in my film, Vigilante, which, again, you can see free through Tuesday at vigilantemovie.com, vigilantemovie.com. Yes, by the way, since it's free, I'm not making money off that. Take my word for it. But the what's happened is we had a story about in Georgia, you have this system where any voter can challenge another voter. So we had this we have GOP operatives, and it's only the Republicans. There's no Democratic challenges that I found yet. 149,000 voters have been challenged by GOP operatives. These are not the state. These are individual self-appointed vigilantes. One guy who the Republican chairman in Columbus, as you'll see in the film, challenged the vote of 4,000 voters. He's in Columbus. That's Fort Benning. He's challenging mainly black soldiers assigned to military bases elsewhere. And I met, you'll see in the film, Major Gamaliel Turner, who is a career military officer, African-American. This guy challenges votes saying he doesn't live in Georgia. Why? Because as a soldier, he was assigned to California. And so he asked for an absentee ballot. They wouldn't send it to him. They said, you've been challenged. Well, guess what? I just heard from Major Turner. He didn't get his ballot. Once again, he's at serving in the military, career his whole life. He doesn't get his ballot. Again, he had to hire lawyers from Washington to fly to Georgia to get him his vote. This time he's flying into Georgia. As he says, that's a heck of a poll tax to fly 2,600-mile cast as well. But just to show you how powerful and important this is, that's what he is doing. That's what people are doing. That's why they'll stand in line, fly in, do whatever it takes. So we'll have to see whether the Jim Crow wins or Warnock wins with his – with people who are just committed and will just fight back. That's what it comes down to.
I talked to a guy who waited 2 hours in line to drop it off. It wasn't even a matter of casting his ballot. And I couldn't help but have this conversation. You know, I've never waited more than maybe 20 minutes during the height of any presidential election, let alone 2 hours, let alone, he said, 8 hours on election day a couple of years ago. And I'm going, you know, these are committed voters. And this is one of those things where I'm hoping people are listening in areas that don't have these kind of long lines. Know that this could happen to you. This is one of those injury to one being an injury to all kind of scenarios, in my view.
Well, it's simple. I'm not a Georgian and I'm not partisan. I don't choose candidates. But if Jim Crow wins in Georgia, that's my Senate. That's my Senate. Herschel Walker will be determining what happens in Ukraine. You know, I mean, it's, look, whether you like him or not, what doesn't matter. The question is not whether Warnock is better than Walker. Excuse me. It's a question of whether Jim Crow is better than democracy.
Yeah. No,
it's
a good
That's
point.
What it really comes down
That's
to.
A good point. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show here with Greg Palast. GregPalast.com, the website. Make sure you go to see the movie Vigilante, Georgia's Vote Suppression Hitman over at vigilantemovie.com. We'll get links out on social media how you can take a look at that. Now, I understand you're part of a lawsuit that's been filed. Explain this, because I got your email.
Okay, yeah.
I got your email.
With the Justice Department.
There was a lawsuit filed. Tell me about it.
Okay. What it is, I and several of the journalists here who've been following this and then joining with the help and advice of the major voting rights lawyers in America, we filed a complaint with the Justice Department. And why didn't we file a lawsuit? Have you looked at the judges lately that were appointed by Trump? So there's a bit of a fear of going to into the courtroom. But at the same time, so we're filing with the Justice Department to activate justice to at least do something simple. The idea of shuttering drop boxes on Souls to the Polls Day, the idea that this only applies, that you cut the drop boxes only in black Atlanta and increase them in the white counties. What we want is something simple. Action by the Justice Department, particularly a demand that they keep the drop boxes unopened and open and available for voters all through this weekend and Monday, where, again, they're being shuttered on Monday and Tuesday. So that, again, if you have your ballot, you have to wait in line to hand it in as opposed to just sticking it in a box. So, again, to increase the lines in Atlanta, and it's only affect Atlanta. There are also restrictions that are affecting black Savannah, Augusta. So it's, you have to understand. And I don't think that Brian Kemp hates the color of these voters' skin. He hates the color of their vote, which is blue. That's what's really going on. Let's face it. Because also the reason why they attack Atlanta is Atlanta is, first of all, it's like San Francisco of the South. It's the gay capital of the South. The LGBTQ community here is activated, and they not many are voting for Herschel Walker. So they understand that it's not just racial. They're looking at there's a culture war here between Atlanta, Savannah, and the rest of Georgia. And that's the real battle. And, you know, it's hard for people on the coast to understand. I can't tell you how many people say, how could Walker win? He beats his wife. You know, he's paid for abortions, but he's anti-abortion. He's all this stuff. He's a born-again Christian. The answer is the evangelicals don't care. Yep. And they use a line which they use with Trump. He's the imperfect vessel of God's will. So literally, you have half the voters of Georgia think that, or half the people in Georgia think that Herschel Walker is the voice of God, but he's just an imperfect vessel. And I got to tell you, if you're in Georgia, you'll quickly learn that if he beat Alabama, and if you beat the Crimson Tide for Georgia, you can beat your wife, you can beat your dog. You beat Alabama, you got a free pass for anything.
Even if you live in Texas.
So it's like, I'm telling you, this is no joke. Remember that that Brian Kemp always ends his speech not only with the usual political stuff of God bless America, but he says, God bless America and go dogs, the Bulldogs. So you have to understand how important football is here, but even more important, how much they are fearful of Atlanta replacing them. This is this whole thing about, you know, like the Jews will not replace us. That's kind of a catch-all for Atlanta can't replace us here in rural Georgia.
I've had this conversation numerous times over the last several days that they're changing the country, that it's this culture war thing, that, you know, people living their lives and pursuing their happiness somehow infringes on their right to be as crazy as they want to be. It's remarkable that's out here.
You know, I was also a labor union consultant. I understand how this works. I mean, I saw, if you'll see in the film Vigilante, we start out at a reenactment of the one single battle that the South won in Georgia against the Union Army. So they're reenacting this 4 seconds of victory for a white Georgia. And I talked to one of the reenactors, and he's got his Georgia Republic flag, which is basically a Confederate flag. And the guy, one thing, when you look at the guy and he says, we got to be independent, we got to get rid of this wokeism, and we got the new voter laws, so now we stand a chance of fighting back against the woke. Well, this guy works in a poultry factory. He's a chicken plucker. What does he get? Where's his, you know, that Brian Kemp refused to take federal money to expand Medicaid because they think that's a black health program. No. The black people in Georgia actually have pretty high incomes out of Atlanta. It's mostly for the rural white people who are really getting it in the neck.
Yeah,
but they're told, you know, this is socialism, and they would rather, this poor guy and this plucking chickens would rather give up his health insurance than give an opening for what he thinks is the gay Jewish black invasion of Georgia. On the other hand, you can't shout against the tide. Because look at this. We not only did Biden win, but you had an African-American and a Jewish senator elected from Georgia. They're right. They're not being replaced. They're being dragged into the 21st century. That's all. And it sounds painful, but when they arrive here, they'll have health insurance.
Yeah. Or you hope, anyway. Because exact same conversation. Someone said the reason that he's voting for Herschel Walker is because of Marxism. And I was kind of stopped because this is a guy probably making, you know, 12, 13 bucks an hour, probably no health care, you know, struggling to make ends meet. I'm sure he's getting by, but, you know, you go Marxism, that's your number one issue. And it's just bizarre to me.
Well, you know, you'll see Reverend Warnock in my film, Senator Warnock now. He took Martin Luther King's place at the Ebenezer Baptist Church. These are the Warnock and Ossoff are two of the most progressive senators we have. I mean, they have a lot in common with Bernie Sanders because they understand that what Georgia needs, it's that guy in the poultry factory who needs health insurance. It's that guy in the poultry factory who needs a higher minimum wage and protection. And what Brian Kemp, the other thing we find out in Brian Kemp is that, and it's not a minor thing, it was Brian Kemp's family, they used to be called the Habershams, who first brought slavery to Georgia, which had been a free state. Slavery was outlawed in Georgia, one of the only places in America where it was actually outlawed. But the Kemp family first brought in slaves, got the King of England just before the Revolution to give them an exception and to overcome the local law to bring in African Americans. And the thing is, so their money is from plantations, and they're maintaining what these poor guys in the poultry factory don't get. Some of them get it, but some don't. They don't understand that they're still on Brian Kemp's plantation.
Yeah.
They're still on Brian Kemp. And this has been a problem in Georgia, because don't forget, after the Civil War, there was, instead of owning black people, they kind of rented them through the sharecropper system. But as the people warned who lived here before slaves arrived, were brought in, they said, we'll be reduced to slavery. We'll be reduced to slave labor. Wages. That's what happened. The small farmers became sharecroppers of the plantation. It's still a plantation economy. And Brian Kemp is still the man in the manor house, except that the nature of the plantation has changed. They're not picking cotton anymore. Rather, the money is in, like, for example, Brian Kemp owns these massive plantations. He has a company called Plantation LLC, believe it or not. His plantations are now these giant toilet paper farms. He sells pine trees, which they chop up for toilet paper. And I say they—that's the Koch Industries, the Koch brothers' company, which takes the Kemp's Georgia pines and turns them into toilet paper. But the real issue is that there's still, again, plantation wages, plantation conditions here, and they get people to kiss the whip that beats them. And that's what is the sad thing when you go downstate. Yep. And you understand it. I'm sympathetic. But, it's hard for them to get the message because they will vote against their economic interests because they're concerned about those strange, dark-skinned, gay people who's probably Jewish in Atlanta.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting couple of days. I'm hoping folks get out to vote. Early voting ends Friday at 7 p.m. Make sure you get out to vote before they're on December 6th. If you don't get in the early voting period, Greg, good on you for bringing this to light. I hope people will go to see the movie. VigilanteMovie.com, free. Get your popcorn. Make it an event out of it. And then get angry and let's do something about it to fix all of this shenanigans. Greg, as always, great stuff. Appreciate the time.
You're the best, Rick. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Our good friend, Greg Palast. Make sure you check out the website, gregpalast.com. Again, vigilantemovie.com. That's the website to check out the movie. Highly, highly suggest it. I've seen it now 5 times. Every time I get just as angry. And you're going to be angry too. Like, I mean, the reality in this is very simple. When you look at what they have done with this Senate Bill 202, when you look at the kind of roadblocks that they have put in the way for people just to vote. And this is the thing, as I'm talking to people and explaining, this is what's going on. They're shocked. They go, how can that be? It's happening to them. And our mainstream media hasn't even begun to explain. Because in areas that aren't affected, as Greg pointed out, Atlanta's getting one Dropbox per 100,000 people. Yeah, I talked to a guy from one of the suburbs. Oh, well, I just walked right in. Talked to a guy in Atlanta, 2 hours. Do you think this was done on purpose? Do you think that they knew what they were doing when they decided that, hey, we're going to put these giant roadblocks in the way? Of course they did. And for all those election deniers out there who think that, Biden was coding in the basement, the real steal is what these Republican governors and these legislatures have gotten away with. Rigging the election before the first ballot's even cast, putting up these massive roadblocks, challenging thousands of people's ability to vote just because they can, for no reason. And that's why you check out vigilantemovie.com. Check out the movie. You'll be shocked. Highly suggest it. Remember.
The Shaw 101 FM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
The Devil's Advocates, the fix for political junkies everywhere.
You recall the Capitol insurrection? A post-ABC news poll showed 54% said Trump should be criminally charged for inciting the riot. That's like a litany of criminal allegations against the former president. You can say it's all partisanship and a witch hunt, but there wasn't one credible accusation against Obama during his entire 8-year term. So how Republicans just ignore all the evidence? I mean, he was perpetrating a coup on multiple levels.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
So all you folks out there, if you haven't registered to vote, register to vote. Get ready to vote. There are so many things on the ballot this November, at our freedom, our liberty, and our way of life. But we'll get to all of that this evening.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m. on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
So all you folks out there, if you haven't registered to vote, register to vote. Get ready to vote. There are so many things on the ballot this November, at our freedom, our liberty, and our way of life. But we'll get to all of that this evening.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m. on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
Our guest is Kristen Elfheim, who is the state Senate candidate for District 19 in the Fox Valley.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bride.
There are really good people that have been in Madison on both sides. And if we're not letting the strongest problem solvers win, we're making a mistake.
Listen to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bride right here on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
27% of the American workforce, and some even say 30%, were in unions who had representation and who clearly did not have to worry about whether or not they were going to get their fair share. But I'm definitely going to fight for people who get the short end of the stick in this society only because they don't have representation. That's who I am.
Check out the Earl Ingram Show every day from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. only on WAUK 540 AM 101 FM, The Shaw.
Finish your high school diploma for you and your family. Visit finishyourdiploma.org to find free adult education centers near you. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnier with your headlines. A new report from the Wisconsin Policy Forum found that total debt owed by the state's cities, counties, villages, and towns rose by 5.4% to $11.04 billion in 2020, the highest amount recorded. Milwaukee, Madison, and Kenosha holding the most debt, but Wisconsin towns have seen the fastest growth in borrowing since 2015. On Wednesday, the Wisconsin Elections Commission certified the results of the November midterm elections with no fanfare. Despite false claims in the past of security over Wisconsin's elections, the election ran smoothly. WEC Chair Don Mills, a Republican appointed by Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, certified the results and stated gratitude to clerks across the state for a job well done. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM.
Door to door to get proof of fraudulent voting. What could possibly go wrong with that?
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the big story the other day, The U.S. beat Iran in soccer 1-0. And I was in a meeting at the time, rousing applause. And I'm like, I don't even watch soccer. But I guess it's one of these things where, you know, hey, if the U.S. wins something, that's great. We want that. And especially, hey, if it is Iran. And here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day, especially maybe the soccer. How important really is this? I've asked our good friend Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, to come join us. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick. It's a big deal. And of course, as you know, I used to live in Iran, and in Congress, I worked through the Clinton and Bush administrations working with Iranian issues. It's a big deal for a couple reasons. We don't do that well in soccer. I'm shocked we beat the Iranian team. All right. If this was football, it'd be different comment I'd make. But soccer, we're different. But in Iran, some of the people went out into the streets and applauded us defeating their own team, which is fascinating because they are avid soccer fans. In fact, a friend of mine told me that one, I think former player or something, that was honking his horn was actually shot and killed for doing that by the Iranian regime. So yeah, so it's a big psychological deal. And some of the Iranians said, good, I'm glad you defeated the Islamic government.
As I said, anytime the U.S. wins something, I'm happy. And the room ecstatic because it was Iran. Let's move to where I'm at. I'm in Georgia right now for the runoff election. I'm looking forward to this being over because I'm just shocked that we're in this situation. I got to bring up the Herschel Walker thing. I mean, I can't believe it's
Which one? The latest two faux pas, or you want to go back?
No, all of this. I can't believe all of it. But, you know, I guess recently he admitted, yeah, I live in Texas.
Texas. And I put in my news notes, oops. He said, well, I made this decision in my home in Texas. And then I decided, and then I came to Georgia.
And occasionally he goes down to the border. I mean, and...
Right, right.
But, you know, the thing is this guy is so unqualified. Look, there's a lot of unqualified people in Congress. Always have been. Right. I don't know to this level.
This one surprised me that Walker got to where he got to. You know, one of the most telling clips is his son on YouTube, who basically came out and said, look, we thought, you know, dad would make this right. We thought he would be honest about it, about the kids and, you know, the whole nine yards. And when, if you watch the YouTube of his son, I think he's about 21. It's painful for him.
Yeah.
He's not some angry kid that wants to hurt his dad. This is a kid that said, I thought we had it all settled and he was going to come out and do this. Of course, now his son doesn't support him because of the way he did it. So you look at that and you think, why didn't, first of all, think about it. Herschel Walker, who obviously sat down privately with his family or disjointed family or whatever you want to call it, why didn't he then follow through and he could have, you know, at least put that behind him? Not that he wouldn't have made a bunch of other mistakes on substance and policy, but he's continuously done that. But he got so close. Like any election, you know this, you're a grassroots guy, you don't take this one for advantage. I mean, I believe that Warnock's going to win and Obama's coming in, which is going to help. But this is not one to take lightly.
No, but the thing is you know, you've worked on way more campaigns than I even know about. But, you know, when you're deciding to run, you talk about the things that are your strengths. You think about that. But you spend more time on your negatives and, you know, going through your closet, so to speak, and finding the skeletons and knowing where they're buried. Did they do none of this for Herschel Walker? Did they do no background check? Did they do nothing? No op research to ensure that, hey, we have an answer for all of the horrible things that you've done? I don't know if they did.
I thought they would. Look, I remember an opposition research case one time where we got it back and we're like, you know, for this candidate, and we give it to him and we're going to go through point by point. And he releases it at a staff meeting of 12 people. And of course, it was in the news within 12 minutes. Yeah, and it was horrific. And with Walker's case, they had to have known this. It's a U.S. Senate race. They pay people good money. I would love to have been doing the opposition research. They had to pay a lot of money on Herschel.
Yeah.
A lot. There was a lot to go through.
Yeah, well, maybe it was the werewolf blood. I don't know. I got to tell you, because I'm here on the ground, we're talking to people who are voting. And look, there's no changing of hearts and minds in this moment. The push right now is just getting people out to vote. But I'm amazed at even the comments of the people who are going to vote for him, who believe he's not qualified and believe that he's not the brightest guy in the box and believe that he's done a whole bunch of horrible things. But they justify it because he's got the right hat. He's got the red hat, man.
And then there was another interesting issue during that election, because I followed, as you know, we followed that, Wisconsin, Ohio, you know, the elections we all follow. followed because they were the key elections. And I talked to people, which was fascinating, from Georgia, who thought Walker was horrible and they really think they would vote for him. They weren't decided. And these weren't, you know, Republicans. These were just basically independent people. And then the debate came up, and then I got the weirdest feedback that I've had in years on a candidate. And they're like, Walker's the street guy. The other guy's too refined. It's not a prize fight. It's a U.S. Senate seat. They said that, though.
No. Look, you got to find something. You got to find something to be positive about. And if that's the argument, he's a street guy. Maybe that appeals to some. Because look, I want somebody who's going to be a fighter. I want somebody who's going to, you know, when things happen, I want somebody who's going to get in there and mix it up. You know, I've said about the Democrats for years, and you've heard me say this: in a street fight, most Democrats will just offer to hold your coat. I can see that you would go, Walker's going to get in there. He's going to plug the hole, so to speak. I'm not quite sure that I liked watching him run the football. This running our government, not so thrilled about.
I think he is a street fighter, but here's the problem: he doesn't know the name of the streets. Okay, that's a problem.
That right? Most certainly a problem. Now Obama's coming into town because look, all resources are here. This is a national election now for these next couple of days. Is this going to help? Do you think?
Yes, I think Obama will help because this is a matter of the base getting out. One of the mistakes was made in an election against me one time. Somebody got within the closest they ever got 5,000 votes. They assumed the next election they would start with the same amount of voters. You don't.
Right.
And the political geniuses on both sides know you're not necessarily starting out with the same amount of people. So some of the base who felt, well, it was close, but Walker was ahead. And if it wasn't for the libertarian, he would, you know, may, quote, have won. Then I think that base needs to come out. So what President Obama will do is he won't turn people's minds in a different direction, you know, that are going to support Walker, but he can reaffirm, I believe, to get the base numbers out.
No, you got to energize people. And sadly, I mean, you know, some of the people I've talked to didn't even know there's a runoff going on. Right. Even though the numbers are impressive, people are getting out to vote. And this is a good thing. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman, political analyst. I got to get your thought on this this Oath Keeper case, though, real quick. You know, two guys found guilty of seditious conspiracy. This kind of puts it in writing. There was a conspiracy.
Right. This is important for several reasons. You and I on your show, I remember when the first conviction and sentencing came out, we were both like, you've got to be kidding me, because the penalty was small.
Yeah.
And now, though, this is a sedition. There's been a conviction on that issue, which is a big deal. And I'm really going to be curious to see the sentencing, because if the sentencing is tough, there are many other people to go down the line in this thing yet. So it establishes, you're correct. First of all, in the legal terms, in the legal courtrooms, there was sedition. There is that charge. It wasn't destruction of property. It was sedition, which is also the attempt, obviously, to overturn an election of the United States. So that's a big deal. But it should send a message down the line to others who were part of this. I don't know what was all in the court hearings, but you can imagine that there were networks, there were emails, people. They just didn't say, oh, I'm going to go that site and then run up to the Capitol. There were plans that were made, a direct planning. That's what led to the conviction on the sedition charge. So I think it's a big deal for the additional cases.
Now, have there been people in the past convicted of seditious conspiracy? And then what have we done with them? Have we hung them, electrocuted them? Have we shot them? Have we done any of those things?
Might have been in the 1800s. I mean, look, their duels were still legal on the floor of the House at one point in time. So I don't know.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping for maximum sentences because, as you just said, I think to this point, way too paltry for the crime that I believe they committed and that the courts have said they've committed. And now this it's documented there was this conspiracy. Now, I got to get to the big issue yesterday because I've been hearing about it from union members all over the place. This rail situation. And I said from the beginning, just so we're on the same page, there was never going to be a strike. They were never going to allow a strike to happen. Congress eventually was going to step in. I'm just upset at the messaging and the way that the president went about it. Look, I'm a supporter of Joe Biden's. I voted for him. I've been on board. I think he's doing the right things policy-wise. I think this was a mistake in the way they went about it. This was always going to be the outcome, but I think the way they went about it was wrong.
I think that, well, I agree. I think that there's a reason they did it, and that doesn't make it right. I believe the White House and the people running it and everybody involved with this, the political system in its entirety, went into panic mode. That's what I believe happened due to inflation, the economy, everything going on an economic base. And I think they went into panic mode that if this actually occurred, then they were going to, you know, be thrown into the depths of Hades of the political world and the economic world. So they had to do something. Now, the problem with this, too, is that you had the 290 to 137 votes, which you had a good block of Republicans that supported the reaffirming the Biden measures, what this is, the Biden deal that was rejected.
Yeah, forcing the contract on the rail people.
And of course, the White House thought that deal was going to be accepted. And what, four different unions within rejected it, membership, I think?
Four of them.
I think they thought it was going to be accepted. So I don't think it's a matter of pride of authorship where they said, well, they rejected our contract that we wanted to negotiate through law, so we're going to put it through. I think now it's a matter, honestly, of panic. But where the messaging is bad, the issue at heart was that there was no support from the White House for the sick days. And I tell a lot of people, this isn't an issue just about money. This is an issue where people didn't have a day off.
Yep.
For how long? Forever.
No, these are guys who are on call, 24/7, 365. If a loved one gets sick, they don't get to go home. They don't get the day off. They don't get the peace of mind of knowing, hey, in 2 weeks, I can plan that preventative, that health care, that doctor's visit to check my blood pressure or get, whatever. There's none of that for these guys. And this was the moment. And it goes back to that age-old question. Do you live to work or work to live? And these guys are like, look, we need some certainty in our lives. And this is where I think the administration fell down. Again, I go back to this was always going to be what was going to happen. No one was going to allow a strike to happen. It would be too devastating for the economy.
Well,
but
they could have
come out and said, look, these greedy railroads have been making profit hand over fist, 50% profit rate over their costs. $23 billion profit last year, $22.1 billion in the first three quarters of this year. They can afford this. They're just choosing not to. And they could have said, look, we're going to take this and make sure that every worker in this country has sick days and put forth legislation for that. Instead of this, we're going to put up two bills, one that's going to ram it down your throat and then one that says, oh, we're going to give you some sick days, knowing that's never going to pass the Senate.
And that's the problem, because if you look at the amount of Republican votes that the bill had, and if you look at the final vote count, technically, in a sense, the Democratic side did not need the Republicans because they lost 8 votes. And I really think out of the 7 or 8, I forget what it was, but votes they lost, if it came down to it, they wouldn't have lost those votes if push came to shove. So they really only needed probably 10 Republicans, although they got more. Now, the reason I went through that whole counting scenario there is because of this. I don't understand why they just didn't put the sick days in the original one bill.
Yep.
Here you go, up or down vote. When you've got an up or down vote, there's people that are going to be standing there, Republicans going, I'm going to vote for that. I've got rail in my district, in my state. So they would have gotten everything they wanted. Now, here's why I think they didn't do it. And this becomes pride of authorship. Well, the White House bill that came over didn't have the sick days in it. So they used an arcane method. And I can't even find out, but I'm going to guess, motion to recommit, I'm going to guess, they used an arcane method to split the baby. So here's your one bill with 290-some votes. Then you have, which would be a mandated 7 sick days, I think. They added 6 to the one, 7 sick days. And then they had a separate motion on that. So when the bill goes to the Senate, the Senate can accept just the bill and the sick days don't exist. Now, Bernie Sanders is going to have something to say for that, because Bernie wants the chance to have an amendment process to re-add to the original bill. Now, that means, of course, the original bill has to come back to the House then for a up or down, no change vote. One hit. That's it.
So do you think this is still possible? Because it's my view that the one in the Senate will pass. It may get the 60 votes, but the other one certainly is not going. The one with the sick days is not going to make it through. So what you're saying is possibly Sanders can tie this up to where maybe down the road they could get the sick days?
They might be able to. The only thing that, look, everybody knows what they did. They didn't add it to the original bill. So that kind of tells you somebody picked up the phone to somebody in the Senate and says, hey, can we pass this thing with the 7 days in it? I don't know. I mean, this kind of conversation must have happened. So it's going over. Now, Sanders is going to try to his magic to get an amendment process where they would get an amendment. The Senate doesn't know where it's at on this at all yet. Right. I would say either side doesn't know where it's at. So there's a possibility it might happen, but I'm going to go on the probability that it won't. You'll get the agreement and, hey, sorry, we'll try somewhere else to get the other days. But Sanders will give it 190% effort. He's not BSing. Bernie's going to try to push all the buttons possible.
And thank goodness for Bernie. But here's the thing. Here's the thing that bugs me. And this is where if Democrats are going to be the party of the working class and they're going to stand up for working people and Biden, the most pro-union president ever. And again, I still believe that he is. This was a put up or shut up moment. This was an opportunity to prove that and not leave the door open for the Marco Rubios of the world to then step in and say, I'm going to side with the workers, knowing that he's never going to vote for those sick days. We both know that's never going to happen.
And what they're doing by using the method they use, which, again, I will argue they could have put the sick days in that one bill and then said, OK, you want to down the contract? You want to go on strike? You want everybody to not, you know, work, blah, blah, blah. People would have voted for it, including at least 10 Republicans, which if they were short on the Democrat side, they would get what they would need. So they would have had the votes. This was a way, like I said, to kind of split the baby, kind of make the Senate have a maybe easier go of it, I guess. But you're right. It will allow the Marco Rubios of the world, no matter if the 7 sick days, if they don't get in by amendment, if I was Rubio, I'd say, well, it wasn't good enough for the House to put it in the bill. Hey, I supported the measure.
Yep. No, it's sure. It's angering and it's frustrating. And this is just another one of those moments where I think Democrats are just bad at messaging. And there was so many good opportunities to turn this around. Instead, all we heard yesterday is Biden did this. Instead of it was the rail companies who did this. The strike could have been averted simply by the rail companies going, yes, we're going to show dignity and respect to our workers by giving them just a little bit. All they wanted was 4 days, just giving them those 4 days, which would have cost them pennies on the dollar to be able to do. And they chose not to because, well, our laws are so badly broken that they know there's no consequences. And it's where my anger level is with the Democrats.
Right. Yeah, I agree because, again, the railroads will be able to even say, well, that president's deal didn't have that in there, you know, and the House reaffirmed it and put it in a separate bill. It gives the railroads the ability to skate when they shouldn't be able to skate.
Yeah. Lastly, before I let you go, zombie virus.
Ooh.
Zombie virus.
Hey, I don't know what to believe anymore, but I've got to tell you, there's this 45,000-year-old, this is a climate change deal, 45,000-year-old virus. And the scientists are saying areas are thawing and this thing's going to be alive. And it's a 45,000-year-old zombie type of virus that may come alive.
It's alive.
And it's not in China. It's not in China.
It's not in China. Do we have a lab there by any chance?
I don't know.
Well, we will be keeping an eye on the zombie virus. But Bob, right, as always, I appreciate the time, my good friend.
Thank you, Rick.
Good stuff. Thank you. Our good friend Bob Ney. The zombie virus, it's coming. It's coming for you. But seriously, I go back to this. The reality is I think they messaged this in all the wrong ways. Just my thought. Want to hear yours? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. You got a question, comment, something on your mind, hit me up with an email. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find yours, you'll find ours. Quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, Email me, Rick, at thericksmithshow.com. So, got an email from Aaron that I can't argue with. Look, I've gotten a lot of emails from people very angry about this rail situation. And Aaron writes, railroad octopus monopoly, no offense to octopuses, is running our national rail as if it were a fast food restaurant by denying the rail workers and the rail union to strike. Biden, Buttigieg, Pelosi, Schumer, Wall Street rep et al. Denies labor its only power to strike, to realize its power, to inspire a movement, he writes, resulting in people increasingly desperate, impoverished, and willing to vote for some mad circus midway barker. He says a working person with a union paycheck to deposit will walk by a ranting madman in Town Square saying, what a nut. He'll muse on his way to Sears to buy a new fridge for his family. But an unemployed guy having just got off the couch in his parents' basement on his way to buy a lottery ticket will stop by and listen to the madman spew ethno-state-Christo-fascism and hate. He says it's pretty simple. And it goes back to, you know, something I've heard said by a number of folks. If you give me some people who are desperate, some people who are struggling, some people who are a little afraid, a little fearful, you give me enough time, to message and propagandize to them, I'll give you a Jehovah's Witness or a jihadist. We can have those extremes when people are desperate and pliable. And this is where, you know, look, I get Aaron's point. I'm as frustrated as anyone. But here's the reality. A strike was never going to happen. It just wasn't. In this country, how people feel in the economy, that's how people are going to vote. And, you know, the thought was we're going to lose billions of dollars a day. It's going to lay off hundreds of thousands of people. There's going to be all of this chaos. And while I would personally, me, if I'm in that situation, I let them strike, because ultimately strikes are about public perception and the public getting behind it or being against it. And this is a gamble when you go on strike. But the messaging here for me is right. The messaging here is an opportunity to take this from just being a handful of engineers, a handful of working people who have the ability to demand something and get attention, to making this something that you could do for everyone. This could be the call of a movement. This could be an opportunity to build that movement and bring people together and unite us across red hat, blue hat. This could get us back to, you know, caring about hard hats, caring about working people, caring about these folks. But instead, what Democrats do? What we knew they were going to do. They're going to force this contract on them. Now, look, are there good things in there? Yes. Are they better than they would have been had the president not gotten involved? Yes. It's much better because the president got involved. Is it better than anything Trump would have done? Absolutely, unequivocally, without question. Because understand, they've been negotiating this for years. Finally, the president said, no, we're going to move this forward. Now, this could have been, and still can. There still is an opportunity to make this a movement issue, to make this, and Democrats, listen up. This is an opportunity to be the party of the working class. This is an opportunity to show working people that you're willing to throw your coat on the ground, ball up your digits, and get in there and fight for people. This is that moment. This is that call to action. This is that opportunity. As I've been saying, this is that moment. It's time to put up or shut up. It's time to, you've been talking the talk, it's time to walk the walk. This is that moment. And I keep coming back to something very simple. Unions make people's lives better. Union job, better life. But I look at these engineers. It's not about the money. Yeah, they threw a bunch of money at this. They did. But they kept that one thing, that control. And this is where the messaging needs to go. Workers have to have something of a say, some voice, some ability to have, well, direction in their lives. And sadly, these railroad engineers, if you know what kind of a life they leave, you wouldn't take the job. And I know people say, well, if they don't like it, they can leave. Well, you know what? That's easier said than done. These folks are saying, no, we're not going to leave. We're going to stand and we're going to fight. We're going to make things better. And this has all the right messaging. These workers were told they were essential frontline heroes forced to work during the pandemic because they were our supply line. They were bringing us the stuff we need and still are.
This is an opportunity to bring people together. This is that chance if Democrats will take it. This is that moment if Democrats will step forward and say, you know what? We're going to push this. I'm disappointed, as disappointed as I can possibly be, that they moved two separate pieces of legislation instead of one. This should have been one bill. If I'm there, this is one piece of legislation. This is, you put those four sick days in this contract, you amend this with those four sick days, and you make these workers' lives better at the expense of these extraordinarily profitable railroads. Or better yet, maybe we start breaking them up. Put competition back in so that they're not such a behemoth in the room that can crash our economy if workers choose to enact their rights. Just my thought. Want to hear yours? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Aaron, thanks so much for the email. See you back here next time.
Listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.